Section 3, Law and Disorder. As you read, look for stock associations formed to lease grazing lands, the efforts taken to curb lawlessness in the territory, and vocabulary term, jurisdiction. Many Texas cattlemen on trail drives to Kansas let their livestock graze on the grasses of the Indian Territory. Kansas ranchers, meanwhile, drove their herds across the border into Indian Territory to graze. The tribes soon realized that they could make money from the grazing. In 1883, seven cattlemen formed the Cheyenne Arapaho Stock Growers Association. The association leased 3 million acres of land in the western part of the territory for 200,000 cattle to graze. But confusion over the lease and ranchers who were not part of the association led to cut fences, cattle raids, burned hay, and other trouble. Cattle were ordered removed from the Cheyenne Arapaho lands in 1885. The Cherokee tried to collect lease money from ranchers who grazed their cattle in the Cherokee outlet, but they weren't often successful. The number of cattle grazing on the Cherokee land was growing, and owners who were lawfully paying for the grazing rights wanted to form a group for protection against fires, thieves, and wolves. The Cherokee Strip Live Stock Association was formed in 1883 at Caldwell, Kansas. One of its first acts was to fence in the grazing lands being leased in the Cherokee outlet. The association paid the Cherokee tribe $100,000 a year for 5 years for grazing rights. Cattlemen paid rent of 2 cents an acre to the association. For the next several years, the Livestock Association maintained order in the Cherokee outlet. Maintaining order. After the Civil War, Light Horse Police for each of the 5 tribes continued to enforce tribal laws. Apprehended criminals were taken to the tribe's courts for trial and punishment. Punishment varied among the tribes, but usually included 25 to 50 lashes on the back for the first offense. A second offense called for a more severe lashing, and a third offense could result in death by firing squad. In 1874, the Cherokee Nation established a national prison at Tahlequah with a gallows for executions. A person condemned to death could be released to his family, but had to return on the execution day. Most Indians honored the practice because failure to return would brand the convicted person a coward. A coward would be denied a home in the eternal hunting grounds with his ancestors. Some of the other tribes that were removed to the territory also established police forces. The Osage tribe formed an Indian police unit, as did the Kiowa and Comanche at the Anadarko Agency and the Cheyenne and Arapaho at the Darlington Agency. Liquor caused the most trouble in the Indian lands. Whiskey had been the indispensable companion of the early fur traders. Before a trade, the liquor, or fire water, was often diluted several times with water to make it last longer. Tobacco, red pepper, or black molasses might be added to give it more of a punch. Liquor had long been outlawed in the territory, but dealers managed to smuggle it past authorities. People sometimes carried illegal liquor bottles into the territory in their high-top boots, a practice that gave them the name bootlegger. Dealers in nearby states set up business near the border. One daring man built a tavern on stilts in the middle of the Red River. Outlaws. From the end of the Civil War until statehood, Indian Territory was plagued with a lawless element. White people were not bound by Indian laws, and the territory was not under U.S. law. Criminals knew they could escape the arms of justice by fleeing into the Indian Territory. Bank, train, and stage robbers, murderers, whiskey peddlers, cattle rustlers, and horse thieves were among the outlaws who made a quick getaway to the Indian Territory, usually with a posse in hot pursuit. The territory's thick forest and brush, caves, hills and mountains, and ravines were ideal for the outlaws. The Doolins, the Daltons, the Jennings brothers, the Cook gang, the Turner gang, Wesley Barnett's bunch, Mose Miller's gang, the Buck gang, and many others fleeing from the law hid in the territory. Outlaws were white, black, Indian, and Mexican. Most of the outlaws were young men, but some were women. Myra Belle Shirley, better known as Belle Starr, was tagged the Bandit Queen by the tabloids of the day. Belle and her husband, the three-quarter Cherokee Sam Starr, homesteaded near Briartown. The Starrs named their home Younger's Bend, and it became a haven for outlaws such as Cole Younger and Jesse James. Belle and Sam Starr were often on the wrong side of the law. Sam, wanted for holding up a mail stage, was wounded by a posse of Indian police. Belle, knowing that a federal court would be easier on him than a tribal council, talked Sam into giving himself up to the U.S. Marshal. Before Sam could face trial, however, he was fatally wounded by an old enemy, Frank West. Belle faced trial for robbery and horse theft, but she never had to spend much time in jail. Belle was killed in 1889, and her slayer's identity was never learned. The Hanging Judge. In 1851, a federal district court with jurisdiction over half of Arkansas and the Indian Territory was established in Van Buren, Arkansas. It moved to Fort Smith in 1871. In 1875, Isaac Parker, a former lawyer, judge, and congressman from Missouri, was appointed judge for the Western District of Arkansas. Parker arrived in Fort Smith on May 4th. On his first day of court, May 10th, 8 men were found guilty of murder and sentenced to death. A day in Judge Parker's court often lasted 10 hours, and he held court 6 days a week. Parker hired Noah Frank as Indian interpreter and organized an army of U.S. deputy marshals, some of whom had seen both sides of the law. Armed with arrest warrants, handcuffs, and ankle and leg chains, the posse would sometimes be gone 2 to 3 months while they searched for outlaws. A wagon called a tumbleweed wagon was used to transport the prisoners to Fort Smith. With no funds for a prison, inmates of every age, race, and crime were housed together in the basement of the abandoned soldiers' barracks at Fort Smith. The first floor of the barracks was used as the U.S. District Courtroom. Not designed as a prison, grates had been added to the basement windows when the room was used to hold Confederate prisoners. The basement was divided into two common areas, each about 29 feet by 55 feet, with 7-foot-high ceilings. Each room had windows, but the windows were under porches and allowed in very little light or ventilation. Urinal buckets were placed in unused fireplaces so odors would vent through the chimney flues, a plan that rarely worked. Each room had a single sink, but jailers rarely allowed baths or clean clothes. Prisoners slept on a wooden cot or on the flagstone floor with a blanket or moldy, straw-filled mattress. Boredom filled the days, and the inmates exercised by marching up and down the room. The poor sanitary conditions and overcrowding finally caught the attention of the public in 1885. In an article that appeared in Eastern newspapers in the summer of 1885, writer Anna Dawes called the jail a piece of medieval barbarity. Congress finally appropriated funds for a new jail, but it did not end all of the problems. Judge Parker ordered that a public gallows for hangings be built, and he soon earned the nickname of the Hanging Judge. In his 21 years as judge, Parker tried 12,490 cases with 9,454 convictions. He sentenced 160 men to death by hanging, although only 79 met that fate. The other 81 inmates either won appeals, were pardoned, or died in jail. The jurisdiction of the Fort Smith Federal Court over the Indian Territory ended in September 1896. But prior to that time, a federal court was established in Muskogee in 1889 for less serious criminal cases and civil disputes. The calm before the storm. Post-Civil War rebuilding and changes were leading to an even more drastic shift in the Indian Territory. The railroads, mines, and cattle were bringing more Euro-Americans into the territory. As neighboring areas became more crowded with new settlers, many began to look longingly at the rich Indian lands. Many lives were soon to go through even more drastic changes. If Reconstruction could be called the calm, then opening the lands to settlement might be called before the storm. It's your turn. Number one, what was a bootlegger? Number two, what famous judge was known as the Hanging Judge? Spotlight, U.S. Deputy Marshals. Judge Isaac Parker gave much of the credit for his court's success in bringing justice to the Indian Territory to his deputies. Lawmen in the territory were perhaps the most integrated group on the frontier and included whites, Indians, and African Americans. Parker's decision to have a diverse group of deputies who brought an understanding of the various cultures and languages helped federal law gain respect in the territory. Deputy Grant Johnson was the son of a Chickasaw freedman and a Creek freedwoman. Black deputy Zeke Miller was a former mine inspector from Ohio. Deputy John Garrett was one of the first victims of the Rufus Buck gang in 1895. Working with lawman Heck Thomas, Deputy Rufus Cannon, son of a former slave and a mixed-blood Cherokee, helped arrest outlaws Bill Doolin, William Christian, Bill Carr, and others. Ex-slave Bass Reeves of Texas had learned several Indian dialects when he sought refuge in the territory. Reeves may have been the first black American west of the Mississippi who became a deputy U.S. Marshal. Reeves used whatever means were needed to make an arrest. Disguised as a tramp, Reeves won the trust of the mother of outlaws. When her outlaw sons returned home to sleep, Reeves handcuffed them while they slept and then successfully returned them to Fort Smith. Reeves's incredible memory helped him overcome his inability to read and write. Reeves learned to associate a written name with the sounds of the name, which allowed him to serve a suspect with the correct document. Chapter Summary. The Indian nations made economic progress after the Civil War, despite political problems and divisions among tribal members over the war. After the Civil War, the five tribes rebuilt their communities with churches, new markets, and thriving businesses. Education became a top priority among the five tribes, as schools were reestablished and new ones were founded. Granting rights and benefits to freedmen was not an easy process and was handled by the Freedmen's Bureau. Many all-black towns were established, which provided the freedmen with safety in Indian Territory. Government schools were established at Riverside and Chilaco to help assimilate the Plains Indians and others into American society. As the railroads made their way west, cattlemen began to drive their herds across Indian Territory to reach the railheads in Kansas. The trail drives only lasted about 20 years, ending when the territory opened and railroads expanded, but they left a legacy of rich cowboy folklore. The first railroad tracks in Indian Territory were laid by the Missouri-Kansas-Texas, MKT or Katy, Railroad, beginning in 1870. The Frisco, Santa Fe, and Rock Island lines followed with additional tracks. Coal mining began in Indian Territory, with European miners imported to work the mines. Law enforcement became a problem in Indian Territory, and light horse police tried to establish order. From the end of the Civil War until statehood, outlaws found refuge by escaping into Indian Territory. A federal court was set up in Fort Smith, and posses and U.S. Marshals roamed the area to arrest outlaws. Vocabulary. Use the following terms in complete sentences that show how each term relates to this period of Oklahoma history. 1. Barbed wire. 2. Bootlegger. 3. Cattle drive. 4. Chuck wagon. 5. Decimated. 6. Domestic. 7. Full bloods. 8. Iron horse. 9. Jurisdiction. 10. Mixed bloods. 11. Pastoral. 12. Posse. 13. Quarantine. 14. Royalties. 15. Segregation. 16. Seminary. 17. Tenant farmers. Understanding the facts. In spite of differences among tribal members, under which Indian chief did the Seminoles begin to enjoy peace and prosperity? 2. Which tribe recognized the need to change tribal laws to better deal with advances they believed were coming in the future? 3. How many students attended schools in the Cherokee Nation? 4. Name the 2 government schools established for Plains Indians following the Civil War. 5. Where were the railheads located? 6. What Kansas City was known as the cow capital of the world? 7. What was the name of the first railroad to be built in Indian Territory? Developing critical thinking. 1. Give evidence that education was important to each of the 5 tribes following the Civil War. 2. Why and how did the building of railroads through Indian Territory change life for the Indians? 3. Among the Indians, a person condemned to death could be released to his family and would then return on the execution day. Would this work today? Why or why not? Applying your skills. 1. On a map of Indian Territory, A. Draw the major cattle trails using 5 different colors. B. Include a legend which shows the color for each trail and the name of the trail. C. Draw and label the major rivers. 2. Assume that you are going to be a cook on a cattle drive in the 1870s. Make a list of the items you will need to stock in your chuck wagon and how each will be used. Exploring technology. 1. Using a search engine, research the life of the American cowboy of the 19th century and tell how each of the following words played a role in his life. Chaps, bandana, boots, spurs, lasso, saddle, stampede, Remuda Wrangler, and Maverick. 2. Choose one of the following outlaws or gangs. Bell Star, the Doolins, the Daltons, Cole Younger, or Jesse James. Write a biography for the one you choose using information you located on the internet and other sources. Try to find a photo and old newspaper accounts if possible. Building skills, traveling through time. You have the following task. For your vacation, you want to visit as many of the state historic sites as you possibly can. You have 2 important limits on your plans, time and money. As a result, you can travel no more than 600 miles round trip on your vacation. You cannot go over your mileage limit. you may wish to choose a traveling companion to keep you company and to help in planning. Use a list of the state historic sites and a state highway map to help you design your route. Begin your trip from your starting point at the town in which you live or the town in which you attend school. Visit as many sites as possible until you have used your allotted mileage. Remember, the mileage to return home must be included in your plans. Present your vacation trip to the class by marking your route on a map. After completing your plan, consider the following questions. 1. What parts of Oklahoma history will you visit on your trip? 2. Will you see all the sites you want to see? 3. How did your starting point limit the number of sites you could include? 4. Why did you think the state chose to make the sites you visited historic sites? 5. Is there a local site that you would like to nominate as a historic site? Why do you think it would make a good site?